Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look, go back to our endangered species programs that we've been doing. It's really been a lot of fun and interesting for me, and I think probably I hope for you as well, to zero in each month on an endangered species. And I've certainly enjoyed these monthly segments, and I hope you have too. Today we're going to focus on some very concrete assistance that's available to you or to me, private landowners. They're really important programs because so many of our endangered species rely on land that is privately owned. And visit today with Darcy Kind. Darcy is the prairie and savanna biologist with the Landowner Incentive Program. It's a program that's part of the Bureau of Endangered Resources at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Darcy was with us a long time ago. Nice to have you back.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Great to have you back. With us as well, Steve Swenson. Steve's an ecologist with the Aldo Leopold Foundation. He directs science and stewardship programs, and those programs at the Leopold Family Shack and Farm. And Steve, thank you for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Larry.
You may have some questions. Maybe you own some land, or maybe you don't, but have some relatives who do, or maybe you just have, you're curious about the incentive programs that we have. I hope you'll join in. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. You know, we've got endangered species, many out there. How do they become endangered? What's the primary reason? Darcy, I turn to you.
Well, there's a pretty big suite of species that are considered at-risk species or rare species. So we have endangered species, threatened species, species that are considered special concern species, and then species of greatest conservation need. Those are classifications by state and then also some by federal government.
Yeah.
And those become rare primarily through loss of habitat and habitat degradation through various forms. And within that suite of species, we have species that are kind of always moving up and down on the spectrum of becoming more populated, less populated. And one of that bigger categories of species are those at-risk species, or species of greatest conservation need, which have declining habitat. And a species like that is something as common as the red-headed woodpecker or the whippoorwill, something that used to be much more common, but their habitat is really declining.
Yeah, we don't hear that whippoorwill. I'm thinking back to my time as a kid where, here in Wisconsin, I grew up here, and the whippoorwill, the song of the whippoorwill, or seeing the red-headed woodpecker, now it's quite a treat. Well, it always was a treat, but, I mean, it's really a treat because it doesn't happen very often.
Right.
So that's a problem. So I would guess, Steve, that getting private landowners involved in protecting and habitat restoration is a sort of a key ingredient to success of turning this around.
It absolutely is. When we look at Wisconsin, somewhere in the neighborhood of 80% of Wisconsin is privately owned. If we are not engaging private landowners in the conservation of their natural resources on their properties, we are missing a major, major chunk of Wisconsin. When we drive across the state, we love the beauty. We want to keep the beauty for future generations, and that means involving private landowners. Our foundation, the Aldo Leopold Foundation, is a private landowner.
Mm-hmm.
We are subject to all of the same forces that affect other private landowners, including things like property taxes. And so we do many, many things on our land, just as a private landowner would, to not only reap the economic opportunities that might be out there, but also the emotional ones that Leopold talks so much about, as well as the ecological. And so we have spent a lot of time working in the ecological components of our property. One of the ways in which we've done that is through the Leopold Pine Island Important Bird Area. We have used some of these at-risk species that Darcy is talking about as indicators of our success or failure in managing our properties. And many of these at-risk species in our particular case are birds. And birds are wonderful indicators of what the land looks like and how the habitat is doing. If you have a prairie and the next morning it's a forest, you have many different species of birds using that property. And so we can track our success over time by using birds as indicators. And this has been very powerful because it's allowed us to pull in our neighboring landowners within the Leopold Important Bird Area, which include the state DNR property to the east of us, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and a private landowners as well. We have one major private landowner across the river, the Phil Pines family, and they have been fully on board with using birds as indicators and helping us manage our properties.
Well, tell me more about the incentive programs themselves, and this is, I expect, where the DNR gets pretty involved.
Sure. The Bureau of Endangered Resources, since 2006, has had a program called the Landowner Incentive Program, and our funding comes from various sources, but most of it comes from the federal government. And the goal of the private landowner of the Landowner Incentive Program is to empower private landowners, because we realize that landowners are the key to protecting rare species. And the Landowner Incentive Program, since 2008, has funded over 130 projects at over $800,000. And the average cost of a project is about $6,500 that the Landowner Incentive Program funds. And it's a cost-share program, so the landowner has to match the amount that we give, which is 75% of the cost, with their 25% through in-kind work or through through their own financial contributions as well. And it's a competitive program. We've always had a very small amount of money available to give private landowners. But it's been extremely successful in doing just that, in empowering landowners and recognizing landowners for the work that they're doing to preserve the unique places of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And we work in close partnership with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service through their Partners for Fish and Wildlife program, and also through programs through the NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service. Again, you know, restoration is a really long-term effort, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of money. And without the partners that we have, be it through incentive programs or cost-share programs or the conservation organizations that we work with, like Audubon and the Prairie Enthusiasts, we wouldn't get the work done. And the private landowners of Wisconsin are really lucky to have those organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, thinking about this, all right, we're preserving or restoring the land in some ways for perhaps for endangered resources, perhaps not. But regardless, I mean, there are other, even if a species isn't endangered, it's certainly going to benefit from any of this work that gets done, I would think.
Yeah, it's really important to think, as a private landowner, to recognize that you're working with a whole system. So we're working with species big to small, from the overstory to the understory, and all of those species are going to benefit from a landowner actively managing their land and creating a healthy, sustainable piece of land.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, by the way, we're talking today with Darcy Kind, prairie and savannah biologist with the Landowner Incentive Program, part of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Steve Swenson, who is an ecologist with the Aldo Leopold Foundation. He directs the Science and Stewardship Program at the Family Shack and Farm, and so it's great to have them along. You may have a question. If you do, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or maybe you've gotten involved. Maybe you've already participated in the program. We'd love to hear your response, maybe your story about that as well. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. And by the way, if you go to my Facebook page, we do have a link to the Aldo Leopold Foundation, plus a direct link to my Healthy Woods Handbook, which we haven't talked about yet, but I will talk about now. So I'm hoping, and also we have a list of resource links that Darcy gave us as an additional comment on our Facebook page. So lots there, and I hope you'll take advantage of it. And I like the look of this handbook that you put together, that's been put together, Steve, that really tells a lot about how to manage a woodlot and a system, frankly.
Yeah, we are very proud of My Healthy Woods. It is upwards of 10,000 copies that have been out there on the landscape now, and we still have them available through our website so people can get them. But we really wanted to create a publication that we didn't see prior to that being developed. And it's a publication that's easy for landowners to pick up and put down when they need to, when they want to, easy to read. We eliminated all the jargon. It's so easy for us in the sciences to throw terms around that landowners just don't know, don't get. It's a problem of communication. We tried to eliminate that. Wanted to make it informative. The type of information we have in there is the essence of those topics. So it covers a broad range of topics, but we really tried to keep it to the essence. I liken it to sitting down with my aunt for Thanksgiving dinner and being able to, in a very short while, convey exactly what she needs to know, recognizing that she's going to be back at Thanksgiving next year, and I better have gotten the answer right, or I'm not going to get my Swedish rice pudding. But we also wanted to make it inspirational, so there's quotes and stories from private landowners, and when they open that up, when a landowner opens that up, they will see themselves. And that's very important because people oftentimes think they're the only ones with these thoughts and ideas running through their head about what they should be doing on their land or what coming up with ideas about what they could do on their land. And so we really wanted to make it feel like they were part of a peer group that's out there.
And this, as you say, you've already distributed thousands of them, of copies, but still available, obviously.
Yeah, still available through our website. We do charge for shipping, but you can go to our aldaleopold.org site. Under the Programs tab, you'll find My Healthy Woods Handbook, find the Wisconsin version, and order it.
Yeah, absolutely. Kathleen in Delavan has a question, so let's go to Kathleen. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. I have just a small, like a city lot, you know, it's just under a quarter acre, and I wondered if this can apply to that, because I've already put 3,000 square feet into most of it native plantings, but I want to do another 500 square feet, and I do the plants, and it's very expensive.
Yeah.
It is a very expensive thing to do to in a city on a city lot like that. My program doesn't often work with landowners like yourself, primarily because we have such little funding available. We really are trying to work with landowners to make a larger ecological impact. As a landowner, the resources that might be available to you might be something more local, and so that would be something to look into. Maybe your city government, if they have some cost share assistance for a rain garden program, but unfortunately, my program doesn't help landowners like you. There are some organizations that you can work with, like the Wild Ones and other organizations.
Yeah, I'm in that,
okay.
And I'm trying to promote this by putting up, you know, the Wild One signs and then National Wildlife Federation sign and the Monarch Watch sign and trying to talk to people and, you know, explain it. And I donate plants to everybody, but I'll check into the rain garden component.
Yeah, Kathleen, I might offer up one of our Woodland School classes coming up this spring that might be of interest to you or other callers. But we have a couple of classes that we're offering this spring, hands-on practical classes for private landowners. One of them is backyard sustainability, doing a lot of gardening, composting, that type of thing. But also native landscaping with prairie plants is going to be another class. And through these classes, oftentimes I think the instructor is one of the most important components, but we're reminded every time we offer one of these classes and get private landowners together that, again, it's that peer-to-peer contact, sharing of ideas among landowners, which ultimately ends up to be very valuable. And so you can meet other landowners at these events and find out how they're tackling some of the costs that can be prohibitive in accomplishing their goals.
Yeah.
Where will that be?
This is going to be at the Aldo Leopold Center.
Okay.
Up in Baraboo, Wisconsin. And it's through the Woodland School. And if you go to our website and look under programs, you'll see the Woodland School mentioned. those classes aren't up there right now, but they will be soon.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Darcy Kine and Steve Swenson, our guests today. Darcy with the Department of Natural Resources, Steve with the Aldo Leopold Foundation. You may have a question for them as we talk about the Endangered Species and Landowner Incentive Programs. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest Darcy Kine of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Steve Swenson of the Aldo Leopold Foundation, and with us to talk about how you and I might get involved in some of these landowner incentive programs. And join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Penny and Kellner, we'll turn to you next. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. I always get interested when you guys start talking about things like this. Is I'm kind of new to it, and I don't really know what all is out there. But I recently read a book about endangered butterflies, so I have about 60 acres in Kellner, and I have 15 or so, 20 acres that we don't do anything with, and it doesn't grow very nice grass. It's very acid, and I was thinking, I'd like to increase habitat for butterflies. And so I started looking into that, and then that leads to increasing habitat for birds and little critters of all kinds. So I don't really want to use it for animals, but I don't know what this program might help me and how I can still keep my agricultural status even if I don't have animals on it.
Mm-hmm. All right, Penny, thanks for calling. Darcy, I'll turn to you first.
Sure. One of the things I would recommend is turning to your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office or your local Farm Services Agency office. They're a really good place to start, especially if you do have land that's in active agriculture or has a recent history of active agriculture. Those agencies are very interested in working with landowners to help preserve and create habitat for a whole suite of species. So creating pollinator habitat is a great example. And as you mentioned, you were trying to attract habitat for butterflies, but you are really improving habitat for a larger group of species. So I think that's a really good place to start. And as an agricultural landowner, you can really keep a sustainable working landscape very easy with really minimal practices, just thinking about the time that you might be mowing or some pretty minimal things that you can do to increase the habitat use by a wide variety of species. Hmm. Just getting some pollinator species in there is a really great thing to do.
And could you tell me again who might be able to give me advice?
Sure. Each county has an office from the federal government is the Natural Resources Conservation Service office. And just to become familiar with some of the programs that they have available to private landowners.
Mm-hmm. NRCS.
Mm-hmm.
And more specifically, Penny, Darcy, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the CRP program, the Conservation Reserve Program, might be a good one for her to look at because it maintains the agricultural status on the land while putting it into permanent cover like prairie.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Worth a look, for sure.
Yeah, okay. Sounds good.
Thanks, Penny. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
Gary in Boscobel. Hi.
Good morning, Larry.
Morning.
I'd like to ask about the private lands initiative and give an example of some problems that arise and wondering whether Darcy or Steve could address it. There's an area in southwest Wisconsin along the lower Wisconsin River near Millville that's a large block of woodlands on state land, but quite a bit of that is also old ridge fields that has grassland bird habitat, and Darcy may be familiar with this. There's a kind of a conflict going on there between whether that grasslands that are providing grassland bird habitat should be planted to trees to convert it to neotropical bird habitat. So you have this conflict between even within birders themselves over how to use that land, whether it should be used for which type of bird, because they're both in trouble. But that leads me to the question of, on private lands and the projects there, should there be some kind of continuity between landowners so that you don't have, for an example, two landowners next to each other, and one wants to plant all the property into forest and the other into native grassland, so you're really not achieving any kind of large-scale continuous habitat for species, but still having fragmented types of habitat.
Sure.
And it's not really serving an ultimately greater purpose than just small parcels that are individually managed for different purposes.
Mm-hmm. Gary, thanks for calling. Darcy, I turn to you first.
It is a conflict that comes up often, and one of the most important things that a private landowner can do is take a look at where they live and look at their ecological landscape and look to see what's around them so that they get a better idea of what they should be managing for, what's going to make the most sense from a landscape perspective. And one of the things that we really try to do is to work with landowners as a group and look at some of those landowners who might be adjacent to some of our state properties, our state natural areas, and look at the way that those properties are being managed, because it is really important to make a big ecological impact. And the mention of forest and contiguous forests is a really big issue. A lot of species need very large tracts of land, and that's one of the things that is decreasing in the state. And so one of the great things about these programs and the work that the Leopold Foundation does is I think, get people to talk to their neighbors, because it is really a community effort. You really do have to talk to your neighbors, and so I think it's a really important aspect of restoration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Gary, that is great insight from your part. Congratulations to you for figuring that all out as a landowner. That is something that we as conservationists wrestle with a lot, is these plant communities and the size of them, especially on the extremes. And so land that is very, very open in prairie, land that is very, very closed, as in forest. We need big blocks of both of those. And to have this conflict on one particular part, as you say, is a microcosm of what happens across the landscape. That being said, that conflict, if it happens in your neighborhood, need not be resolved, and still you can maintain good habitat on your land. For example, red-headed woodpeckers, meadowlarks, both in need of habitat, don't need big blocks of land. And so you could be doing very open prairie and savanna on your property. Your neighbor could be doing closed forest on their property, and you could still be benefiting species of at risk.
Excellent. Gary, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call and your input. More callers online here, and let's go to Mary in Madison next. Mary, hi.
Hello. Yes, I have two questions. Maybe you can't take both of them, but one is, do you ever encounter people that are enchanted with a fragment of sedge meadow and want to foster that? And the other, are there two examples you can give, one mammal species and the other plant, that are endangered in sedge meadow? And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. So Mary has an interest in sedge meadows, obviously, and Darcy, you want to start?
Yes, sedge meadows are definitely enchanting. And one of the ways that you can take a look at a sedge meadow and figure out if you have a sedge meadow is to take a look at the species that are occupying those areas. And we are lucky in the southern and southwestern part of the state to have some really intact sedge meadows. And there are a number of people who are managing those through prescribed burning and keeping woody invasives out. I think the biggest hindrance to sedge meadows is reed canary grass. And so some of the cost share programs through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Partners for Fish and Wildlife program, often works with landowners who are trying to restore communities like sedge meadows. One of the very unique plants that's found in Sedge Meadows is a federally listed species and state listed species. It's the Eastern Prairie Fringed Orchid, and the state is protecting a number of areas that have this plant in abundance. And there are two really great examples of private landowners in the state who are doing a remarkable job of managing and preserving this habitat for this really unique species.
Very cool. Very cool indeed. Thank you very much for calling.
Yeah, and to get back, Larry, if I could just add, to get back to some of government programs, Steve, that might be available to help landowners, I'm not sure how big a parcel she was working on. It seemed like it was a fairly small one, so she may not qualify for the program. But the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, EQIP for short, EQIP, is available through the Natural Resources Conservation Service, which you mentioned earlier, and that has practices like Darcy described, brush management, prescribed burning, all the things that would keep a sedge meadow in a sedge meadow.
Excellent. And by the way, you can join in, too. We have open lines, finally. You can get in fairly quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Sabella in Rice Lake, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hello. I recently bought a home on 3.5 acres. It's on Lake Montanus. It's on the filtration end of the lake. University of Wisconsin Regents bought on the other side. So they are leaving it natural. When I bought my property, it looked like a golf course. I did nothing but let everything grow up. I've got now a natural rain garden out there. I've got a meadow. I'm wondering if I can get some funding or some help to bring this back to good prairie meadow. And by the way, the birds have been coming in abundance this summer. It was just amazing, the wildlife that came back in just one summer.
Hmm.
The butterflies and the moths and the everything, dragonflies, birds of every nature, long-legged waders. I've also on the stream that comes out of the lake. So I have 700 feet of waterfront and 3.5 acres. Is there some place I can go to get some advice, maybe some financial help to the project?
Well, thanks for calling, Sabella. Darcy, I'll turn to you again.
I would actually, in the northern part of the state, we don't have the Bureau of Endangered Resources doesn't have a program, but the fact that you're on a lake and surrounded by protected land is really important. One of the places that I would recommend that you turn is your county government office and your county conservation department. Again, in the northern part of the state, a really big issue is that the issue of lakeshore plantings and providing native habitat along the lakeshore to prevent issues like runoff. And so that's a place that I would look. Again, it's really important to think about what's happening in your larger area. And so take a look at how that land is being managed next to you as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And perhaps the University of Wisconsin Regents can help me with that too, with their vision of what this end of the lake should be.
Well, it would not hurt to talk to them, for sure. Thank you very much for calling, Sabella. Sean in Cedarburg, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I've been very interested in this program. We live in a small subdivision in Cedarburg, about a 13-home subdivision. We have a conservancy that we turn into a prairie, planted wildflowers, and so we have during the summer. But we don't really have any official management of it. We have a walking path through it. We have some birdhouses that we put up. But what else could we do? Could we be involved in this EQIP program that I heard you mention earlier?
And did you? I didn't hear, Sean. How much acreage are we talking about there for your conservancy?
I would say maybe 5-8 acres or so.
Okay. All right. 5 to 8 acres. This is a group of homes that have this as a conservancy. Darcy, comment?
There are some great examples of people in your situation managing communally owned land, and especially in the southern part of the state. And one of the places that I would recommend that you turn are some of the conservation organizations in your area. A great place to learn about how people are managing these areas is to actually get out on the ground and give it a try with some of them. So an example is the Nature Conservancy, who does a lot of active on-the-ground work in the southern part of the state and southeastern part of the state. Because of the ownership, the fact that it may be subdivision-owned, It may not fit into some programs for cost share assistance, but again, it may be a matter of looking to see what partners you might be able to work with to either get a little bit of cost share or some time from those people as well. And some mm-hmm. of the organizations like the Nature Conservancy or the Wild Ones or the Furry Enthusiasts.
Certainly plenty of advice,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, and I think another organization they could look to, Darcy, is the Prairie Enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. And the other reality that you might have is that you have a lot of people power that you can draw from, and you may not need a lot of dollars. And so if there are invasive species problems, maybe you can rally the subdivision and get people putting some sweat equity into the property. So maybe a little burning, a little brush control, and invasive species control, and you'll be well on your way to enjoying the riches.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. And Terry in Green Bay... On to you now. Hi, Terry.
Hi there. Good morning. I'm going to send for that booklet that you were speaking of.
Yes.
I own 160 acres over west of Tomahawk. Beautiful swamp, cedar swamp, wooded. I've got a 40 of it in managed forest crop, an 80 in managed forest law, and then I have to pay taxes on a single 40 of those 440s. I want to manage my land for wildlife. Everything is wooded, swamp, like I said, cedar. What can I do? I've been trying to put up wood duck boxes in the back because I've got a creek that goes through on the county forest land. I'm surrounded by county forests and private property on one side. I put up wood duck boxes. The bears tear them down. You know, what else can I do up there?
Mm-hmm.
How do you know you're not doing it? I think you're on the right track. You have the property... managed through those programs. I hope your management plans are good, and if you're proud of them and they're moving in the right direction and you're doing both the mandatory and the recommended practices, you're probably doing a lot of good for your land. A lot of good wildlife management is forestry. And so I think you're well on your way. You could talk to your forester to find out if there's more things you can do through your managed forest law agreements, contracts that would benefit wildlife.
Now, but your book, My Healthy Woods, would that be something?
Yeah, certainly. We have a chapter on wildlife, and you can, when you get your copy, take a look at that and see if there's other resources in that chapter that might spur your thinking. Certainly, you could be thinking about species of shrubs and trees that would provide food for animals, cover for animals. Maybe there's cutting practices that are recommended mm-hmm. or mandatory through your managed forest law that, again, provide for escape cover or nesting cover for the wildlife you want to see.
And one, as long as we're talking about things that are available, we have a great phenology calendar as well. Darcy?
Yes, it's a collaborative effort, but there's a phenology calendar that's available to the public for a small cost. But it's as you know, phenology is just the monitoring of things coming and going, and Leopold was a trendsetter in that, and his mm-hmm. family was a trendsetter in that. And it's available at a few different resources, and one place to go is to the Aldo Leopold Foundation website, and you can go online to get more information about the calendar. But it's really fascinating to look through each month, the dates of things coming and going, and some incredible photography of Wisconsin wildlife in this calendar as well.
I just turned to January, and I see that January 11th was Aldo Leopold's birthday, as a matter of fact. He was born in 1887. A little bit of information that I didn't know. And here's a beautiful picture of a waxwing for January. It's just the photography in this is just wonderful, and the materials that go along with it as well. And so that, again, that's available.
One of the places that you can get it is through the Aldo Leopold Foundation, and it's a collaborative effort between the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, UW Extension, the Foundation, many partners, NRCS, USDA.
So lots there, and actually probably through Extension too, but if you go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, we've got a link to the Foundation. You can go right there and take a look at what's going on at the Foundation too while you're there. And then you can go ahead and order the Phenology calendar, four-color, beautiful calendar, or, let's put it that way, My Healthy Woods, which is a handbook for family woodland owners, and certainly something that is going to be very useful to you. And, Steve, Darcy, anything in conclusion here in our last minute?
I just want to recognize all the private landowners out there who are doing incredible work. Their work continually amazes me, and it's an amazing group of dedicated people who are really doing a great work for the state of Wisconsin and for broader biological diversity.
Absolutely. And Steve?
Yeah, likewise, Darcy. Landowners out there are doing the land ethic, as Leopold saw it. Pulling the waters, the soils, the plants, the animals into their sphere of consciousness and acting upon that in a ethical way. And so we have a great state for private land ownership.
Wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is. And I want to thank you both so much. Hope you can come back and do this again. It'd be fun to have you back.
Thank you.
About this topic, or even there's some other related things that we could talk about as well. Darcy Kind is Prairie and Savannah biologist with the Landowner Incentive Program. That's part of the Bureau of Endangered Resources at our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Steve Swenson, ecologist with the Aldo Leopold Foundation. And he leads the Science and Stewardship Program at the Leopold Family Shack and Farm. And if you've never been there, you ought to go. It's a wonderful place to visit and to learn. There's plenty you can learn there, and in a very fun way. Well, I'm telling you, great to have them along. Great to learn about these programs. Coming up next, we'll talk about some other sustainable ways to use our lands. Some folks from the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center are coming by to talk with us about what we can learn from bioenergy crop trials. It should be interesting, and I hope you'll stay tuned right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.